from 1972's number one record. That is Big Star here with the Ballad of El Goodo here on WRCT Pittsburgh. Before that was Watch the Sunrise from number one record. And then starting off that entire set was September Girls from that second album, Radio City. Now, I have time for one more song. So for this last song, I'm going back to that third album that was recorded back in 1974. At that point in 1975, Ardent Studios made 250 test pressings of it to try to shop it around, figure out what's going on with it. But the band was kind of tired. They were dissolving at that point. A lot of and this last record was kind of commercially unavailable, if I can use it as those words. So say they weren't having much luck with that. In 1978, actually, PVC Records bought the tapes and put the album out. Sadly, Chris Bell, founding member of Big Star, he passed away in an automobile accident shortly after its release. But I think we should go back to that album for my final song. It's a song called Holocaust. You can hear a lot of like Jeff Buckley in this. So think of the influence of this band, a Big Star, even in music like this. Now Al Shilton didn't realize that he was kind of plagiarizing the music of Yoko Ono with this song, but he later credited Yoko to part of this with her song, Mrs. Lennon.
Your eyes are almost dead, can't get out of bed, and you can't sleep. You're sitting down to dress, you're a mess. You look in the mirror. You look in your eyes. Say you realize everybody goes. Everybody goes as far as they can. They don't just care. They stood on the stairs, laughing at your errors. Your mother's dead, she said, don't be afraid. Your mother's dead, you're on your own, she's in her bed.
I drive my bus in a busy city. That's why road safety is so important to me. I know that I must slow down and be extra careful when I make a wide turn. Buses need more room than cars. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, remember to give buses plenty of time and space to finish turning before driving ahead. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman today. And you know what? We've got a lot to talk about, so let's just hop right into it. First and foremost, let's talk about the midterms, because we do have a very important day coming up very soon, and that is Labor Day. And typically in election years, once you hit that Labor Day mark, everybody switches into general election mode. So if you're already tired of midterm news, then I am very sorry, because there's going to be a lot coming out once we hit Labor Day in just a couple weeks here. But right now, and this honestly is super astonishing, I love to see it though, Democrats are looking pretty good, right? Generic ballot polling actually has them up against Republicans in House races. The Senate now looks like it's firmly going to be in Democratic control, to the point where we may not even have to worry about people like Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema for the next 2 years. Things are looking pretty darn good. You've got the post-Roe bump. You've got the Inflation Reduction Act. Gas prices are coming down. Inflation coming down a little, still really bad. Unemployment numbers look good on paper. But there is one thing Republicans have going for them right now. And that, of course, is Donald Trump's post-FBI raid poll bounce. Now, I use the term raid not because I'm, you know, agreeing it was a raid, but because that's a lot easier than saying the FBI's execution of the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. So please understand, when I use the word raid, what I mean is the lawful execution of the search warrant down at Mar-a-Lago. But his poll numbers have gotten a bounce from that. And of course, Ron DeSantis' poll numbers have actually gone down since the FBI went down to Mar-a-Lago. And if that Republican anger holds, Republicans may do better in this year's midterm elections. Or at least that's the prevailing theory, right? We have seen Republicans postulate this. Cassidy Hutchinson, of course, who was one of the star witnesses of the January 6th committee over the summer, came out the day after and said, well, you just handed the midterms to the Republicans. I don't agree. Because, see, there's a big difference. What's happening with the Democrats right now is that you have anger over Roe versus Wade getting overturned. You have anger at January 6th, you have the lingering threat of authoritarianism coming from all of these Republican-controlled states, taking away rights of certain groups of individuals state by state. All of that has angered Democratic voters. But more importantly, it has energized them. Compare that to what's on the other side. Oh, we're so mad at the FBI right now. Cool. You're going to be mad in a week? You're going to be mad in 2 weeks? And by the way, the funniest part about that is a lot of that anger already had subsided. I'm not saying all of it did, because you still have, you know, the people out there threatening the lives of FBI agents, threatening the lives of Merrick Garland and other members of the DOJ, the magistrate, Judge Reinhardt. But the anger had already started to subside by the time we learned that Donald Trump likely had classified nuclear documents down there at Mar-a-Lago. Majority of independents support the raid. Majority of Democrats obviously do. Republicans, only about half, right at, I think, 50%, are opposed to the raid. So even if the Republicans, by virtue of Trump, got a bounce in the polls, which Trump did, I don't know that that anger carries, right? You've got the front page or cover story, really, of Newsweek right now, talking about this post-raid bounce. Is this enough to push Republicans over the edge? No. No, it isn't. Not even close. Because the more that comes out about it, the worse it looks for Donald Trump. Now, I will give Trump credit, which is not something I ever do, but I will give him credit last week for kind of backing the DOJ into a corner by calling for the release of the affidavit. You know, let us see all the evidence you have, including the name of the leaker, so that we can clear all this up with the public. Well, whoever was advising him to do that clearly understood that the DOJ can't do that. You know, not only would they put lives unnecessarily at risk, because we've all seen the threats coming from Trump supporters, but it also could impede the actual investigation itself. If we release this, you'd get the names of individuals cooperating. You might get the names of other targets. You might get more information that could lead to the destruction of evidence, and we cannot do that. In fact, the DOJ actually came out within the last couple days and admitted part of the reason we don't want to release this is actually to protect you, Donald Trump. But the reason I say that that kind of backed the DOJ into a corner is because Trump called for the release. He knew they couldn't do it. So once they say, no, we can't, he goes, aha, I gotcha. I knew all this was phony. Otherwise, you'd release it. And his supporters, including, you know, plenty of people in right-wing media, also jumped on that messaging saying, obviously, it's fake. And the reason they're jumping on that messaging is because they want to get that bounce back. They want to make sure that those positive poll developments that they have seen since the search of Mar-a-Lago, they want to make sure that they hold on to the midterms. So they want to keep talking about it because they think it's going to help Republicans in November. But in reality, what it's going to do is it's further going to energize Democrats and it's going to turn independents away from the Republican Party. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? They want to talk about it because they think it helps with the Republican base. But at the same time, the more they talk about it, the more it's going to turn off independents. Neither party in this country can win elections, maybe win some primaries, obviously, but you can't win a general election if you do not attract those middle-of-the-road, moderate, independent voters. You simply cannot. The numbers are not there. So the more Republicans talk about it, the worse their poll numbers ultimately are going to get. They may have gotten that little bitty bounce right now, but it's not a type of anger that is sustainable. Certainly not in a year when Trump isn't even on the ballot. You know, if this was 2024 and this happened and Trump was running, that would help all Republicans. But he's not on the ballot this year. So I don't know what the Republican strategy here is, but I do know with pretty much certainty that it definitely is not working for them. And you know what else, by the way, is not working for Republicans? Having Rick Scott, senator from my state down here in Florida, running the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Now, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, the NRSC, is also the fundraising arm of the Senate Republicans. And they got a problem right now. The problem is, they all want to know where the heck the money has gone. because they have raised $173 million this cycle. It's a lot of money. And they got a lot of contentious races out there that they need to be spending this money on. There's just one problem. It's almost all gone. Rick Scott, apparently bad with money still. And I'll expand on that still in just a moment. But the Republican Party in the Senate now only has $28 million cash on hand. Like, the situation is so bad that last week, again, right as we're heading into general election mode, they announced they were withdrawing $10 million worth of ads in crucial swing states, like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Two seats Republicans desperately need to hold on to, but right now, polls are not looking so good for them. And they had to pull out their ad buys because they only have $28 million. They're not going to go blow another $10 million. You know, a third almost of what they've got left on two races. So the big question these Republicans want to know right now is, Rick Scott, where is the money? What the heck have you done with $150 some odd million? Where is it, bud? So far, no answers. But I think it's important to point out the fact once again, and I'm sure most everybody knows that, but it seems a little relevant here, right? Rick Scott, before he got into politics, was a businessman. He was a businessman that started a healthcare company. A healthcare company that later on down the road would commit the largest to date Medicare fraud in the history of the United States. Over $1 billion. And the fraud was apparently so bad that Rick Scott, in his deposition, had to plead the Fifth Amendment, I think something of what, 75 times? I know that's not as much as Trump, you know, having to plead it 440 times in front of Letitia James a couple weeks ago. But 75 times pleading the Fifth so you don't incriminate yourself into that massive Medicare fraud, that's a lot. And so somewhere along the lines, somewhere down the road, once Rick Scott got into politics, governor of Florida for 8 years, now he's in the Senate, Republicans looked at him and said, hey, remember that time this guy's company oversaw the biggest Medicare fraud in history? Right? Clearly they can't be trusted with money at all. What if we put him in charge of all of our money? And then wouldn't you know it, all their money disappeared. Now, before anybody jumps to any conclusions, please understand, I am not in any way suggesting that Rick Scott stole this money. You know, put that thought out of your head right now. Right? That's probably the safe thing to do. We shouldn't jump to any conclusions. And by the way, we're not. If Rick Scott had taken, you know, $140 million from the Republicans, 145, I think is the exact number, they'd know. Right? There are receipts for these kinds of things. Rick Scott could not have taken the money, but he is bad with money. Okay, that's something we can all pretty much agree on at this point. So why in the heck Republicans decided to put this guy in charge of the money still blows my mind. What, because he's independently wealthy? He's got a net worth of hundreds of millions of dollars? What, do you think he was going to fill up your campaign coffers with his own bank account? Heck no. Oh, because he knows a lot of rich people? You all know a lot of rich people. You didn't need him to be in this position. And now you've put yourself in the position of having a guy that already shouldn't have been trusted with money. I mean, pleading the Fifth 75 times, that's 75 major red flags right there. But you still looked at him and you said, you know what? Let's give him the purse strings. Let's let him be the standard bearer for the Republican Party and just spend our money, do whatever. We've raised a lot of it. And now, in the final stretch of these midterm races, Republicans are looking and saying, oh God, we're out of money. We got to take a quick break. I am Farron Cousins. If you want more from me, you can find me on YouTube on my two channels, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and youtube.com/FarronBalanced. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FarronBalanced. This is the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins in for David Pakman, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David Pakman today. Now, if you tuned into the program yesterday, you heard producer Pat doing a wonderful job talking about Donald Trump going after Mitch McConnell, going after Elaine Chao. And I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I do want to take a couple minutes and talk about that story one more time, because I do believe that there's more that we need to be looking at here. So in case you missed the story yesterday, Donald Trump over the weekend came out. let me just read it. This is what he put on Truth Social. Why do Republican senators allow a broken-down hack politician Mitch McConnell to openly disparage hardworking Republican candidates for the United States Senate? This is such an affront to honor and to leadership. He should spend more time and money helping them get elected and less time helping his crazy wife and family get rich on China. So, of course, Elaine Chao was Donald Trump's transportation secretary. And yes, there were plenty of allegations against her while she was transportation secretary that she was steering federal money towards her family business. They were going to investigate that, but then after she resigned after January 6th, the DOJ just said, forget it. Let bygones be bygones, right? That's terrible. And of course it was Trump's DOJ, but that doesn't mean the DOJ couldn't still do that, right? I mean, there were credible allegations, right? There was evidence that suggested that she was using her position to benefit her family business. Kind of sounds like the thing we ought to be investigating, right? Isn't that the kind of thing that we want to root out of politics? But all of that aside, it's the attack on Mitch McConnell himself that really stuck out to me. Because Trump, like everybody else in this country, looks at the poll numbers. And right now, those poll numbers show that not only are Democrats most likely going to retain control of the Senate, but they're probably going to pick up a couple of seats, too. They could end up picking up seats in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, as well as holding on to seats that they previously thought they may not, including in the state of Georgia. So Democrats are sitting pretty. Republicans are running out of money. You know, thanks to Rick Scott being a horrible manager of the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, they're running out of money. They're pulling ads in crucial swing states, including Wisconsin and Pennsylvania that I just mentioned. And so they need a fall guy. They need somebody to blame for the fact that Republicans in the Senate are doing very bad. Enter Mitch McConnell, right? Donald Trump, as we all know, has been going after Mitch McConnell for months and months and months. Just absolutely trashing the guy earlier this year and last year, of course, trying to get people to run for Senate by pledging that they will not vote for Mitch McConnell to be in a leadership position again. He only got two people, by the way, to sign on to that whole deal. But this is something Trump has been laying the groundwork for a year. Replacing Mitch McConnell. So what he is doing right now has less to do with McConnell's wife, has nothing to do with the investigations that should be taking place. He is setting McConnell up to take the fall for the fact that Republicans put forth some bad candidates. And the irony here, of course, is that these candidates that are likely going to lose, these are all Trump-backed candidates. Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, latest poll numbers show him doing terribly right now. Well, he's also implicated in the fake elector scheme. But don't worry, he said this week, he came out, he's like, I was only involved in it for, quote, seconds. Okay, but you were still involved by your own admission now. So good luck with that in court. Then you have, of course, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. We all know how that's going. Herschel Walker in Georgia. Terrible campaign with a terrible candidate. J.D. Vance up in Ohio, who Trump thought was going to be the golden boy. Can't even beat Tim Ryan. So all of Trump's people are failing. And Mitch McConnell has been coming out recently, blaming Trump without having to name him, for basically saddling the Republican Party with these horrible candidates. So Trump is trying to flip the script, of course, blame it all on McConnell because his leadership is just terrible, so he can finally oust the man that he has had this personal vendetta against for over a year. Probably not going to work. Probably wouldn't work out well for Republicans anyway, even if that happened, because as horrible of a human being as I believe that Mitch McConnell is, he is good at what he does. Now, what he does is terrible. Don't get me wrong. But that guy knows how to play the game. That guy knows how to manipulate people. He knows how to be sneaky, conniving, backstabbing, all of that. That's how he's gotten so far ahead in life. So if you remove that guy from the top of your party, you're going to suffer. Democrats are going to do so much better. So I guess what I'm saying is, keep up the crusade, Donald, because I would love nothing more than to see Mitch McConnell ousted from leadership, because that's going to create a massive void within the Republican Party that I don't think any of you know how to fill. And while we're on the subject of things Trump has done, we obviously have to talk about all of the investigations against him. Because recently, Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former lawyer slash fixer, came out in an interview and suggested that there is going to be, quote, so much flipping on Donald Trump once all of these investigations get to that point. And of course, the big one recently, last week, Alan Weisselberg, Trump Organization chief financial officer, pleaded guilty to 15 different counts. Every count, by the way, that he was charged with, he pleaded guilty to. They didn't drop any of them. So he had to plead to each and every one of them. And he's only going to get 5 months on Rikers Island. He is eligible for early release after 100 days. So he's going to spend a little over 3 months in there. But the judge did warn him last week, if you do not cooperate fully, truthfully, and honestly, I can put you away for 10 to 15 years on Rikers, which, given your age, is pretty much a life sentence. And here's the best part about Weisselberg's cooperation with the prosecutors. He can't plead the Fifth. He cannot plead the Fifth Amendment because he's already pleaded guilty to all of the crimes he was accused of. A plea of guilty basically does away with your Fifth Amendment rights of self-incrimination because you've already admitted you did the things. Kind of like the acceptance of a presidential pardon. If you accept a presidential pardon, our Supreme Court says you can no longer plead the Fifth because acceptance of a pardon is an acceptance of guilt. So Weisselberg literally has no choice. All right, you either go to Rikers Island for 15 years, which probably would be the rest of his life, or you give us every single thing on Donald Trump. You can't get out of it. You can't excuse it. You can't, you know, call in sick. You can't plead the Fifth. You can do nothing to stop what's coming. And of course, that was just one of the examples, of course, that Michael Cohen recently gave. Because that's just one of the many investigations that Donald Trump is facing. We also have the situation in Georgia, the Fulton County Special Grand Jury. And a lot of Donald Trump's friends, including his former lawyer Rudy Giuliani, have had to testify now. And while we do not know what Rudy Giuliani specifically told that special grand jury, we do know that Giuliani's out there in the media still defending Donald Trump, still denying all wrongdoing. Actually said recently that he should get his law licenses back because he hasn't incited a riot in the last year and a half. But Rudy Giuliani is kind of the same situation. Guy is 78 years old. A prison sentence for him, especially given his recent health, is likely a life sentence. Even, you know, 5 years. With your health conditions, you're probably not walking out of that jail ever again. So Giuliani, much like Weisselberg, has the incentive to flip on Donald Trump. But with Rudy, I think it's a different story, right? I don't know that Rudy would flip. I still don't, because I still think Rudy Giuliani holds out a slight amount of hope that Trump's going to get back in office And then what? Make him Attorney General, I guess. He's going to do something great for me. I just know it. He hasn't paid the bills that I've submitted to him, but he's totally going to take care of me eventually, right? Well, you keep on hoping, Rudy. We'll hope right there with you, right? You'll get a good job in the second Trump administration if it ever materializes, but I'm not going to hold my breath. If you want out of this mess, which, by the way, all of Rudy Giuliani's legal troubles are because he stuck his neck out for Donald Trump. If you want out of that, you're going to have to flip. That's your only option. And that's basically what Michael Cohen is telling us. All these people, whether it's with the fake elector scheme, whether it's with the New York investigation, whether it's with the other New York investigation, whether it's with the January 6th investigations, whether it's with the documents investigation down at Mar-a-Lago, all of these horrible things that Trump has been implicated in, with all of these walls closing in, somebody, somewhere, somehow is going to flip on this guy. And once that first domino falls, the rest of them, as Michael Cohen says, gonna start flipping like crazy. But I will say, Trump does have one thing going for him right now. And that one thing, of course, is the fact that his poll numbers are looking better. And there was another new poll out this week that I want to talk about for just a minute, because I think it's worthwhile, because this is exceptionally creepy. Following the FBI's execution of the search warrant down there at Mar-a-Lago, what Trump calls, of course, the raid, Donald Trump's favorability among Republicans increased. Now, we know that. There's nothing, you know, surprising about that. But listen to this. This is according to an NBC News poll as reported by The Hill. Republicans who support former President Trump more than they support the GOP climbed to 41% in August, up 7 points from May, when 34% said they supported Trump more than the party. A slim majority of Republicans, or 50%, say they support the party more than they do Trump, the poll finds. But that's down from 58% in May. So we went from a 24-point gap of Republicans who said they love the party more than they love Trump to now a 9-point gap of Republicans who say they love the party more than they love Trump. Now think about what that means for just a moment here, right? These are Republican voters. So outside Republican world, you know, election applications of this poll don't really exist. This means that you have 41% of Republicans out there, based on this poll, who say that my loyalty is not to a political party. It's not to the office of the government. It is to Donald J. Trump. That guy that spends all his time golfing and complaining about things online, that's where my loyalty is. I look at him and I just, right? I see it. I feel it. The power coming off of that man. That's nuts. And I think it's time we just say things like that, right? We just have to come out every now and then, call it what it is, and just say, that's nuts. But that is what today's GOP is. You know, we saw it with Liz Cheney losing by like 40 points last week. We see it with the way these Republicans react anytime Donald Trump gets in trouble. You know, the individuals showing up and wanting to attack the FBI, a building filled with people with extensive firearms training. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to take them all on. Yeah, it didn't end well for any of them. But that's how much they love Donald Trump. That's what they're willing to do. It doesn't matter if it seems crazy to us. To them, it seems normal. And that's what we're up against on the other side. And that is why these people are so dangerous. We got to take another break. Again, I am Farron Cousins. You find me on YouTube at youtube.com/FarronBalanced, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FarronBalanced. This is the David Pakman Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman today. And if you want more from me for some reason, but you can definitely get it on my YouTube channels at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and youtube.com/FarronBalanced. So this past weekend, Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow, held what he had told us earlier in the week, last week, was going to be the event to end all events. He said, after this weekend's event, you will not be able to walk away saying that all of these claims of voter fraud are a hoax or that any of this is a lie. You will all be convinced, he said, that the voter fraud happened because that is how serious he is about it. And that is how awesome the evidence that he has was going to be. Well, it's Tuesday, so the event ended on Sunday. There was 12 hours on Saturday, 12 hours on Sunday. And I don't know if you've noticed this, in case you haven't checked, Donald Trump is not president again. There were not massive reports over the last 48 hours of amazing evidence of voter fraud revealed by the Pillow Man. In short, Mike Lindell once again lied to everybody about everything, and instead, according to reports, spent most of his time over the weekend complaining about the media, whining and crying about media coverage of him and his claims and his multiple now cyber symposiums. He had a couple lawmakers show up. Marjorie Taylor Greene showed up, and we'll get more to that in just a few minutes. But no earth-shattering revelations. No, oh my God, Trump actually won the election claims from anybody on the left or the right. He basically paraded a bunch of people up on stage who said the election was stolen. Bye. But nobody gave us any evidence. You're watching this, so I'm going to go ahead and assume that you're not one of the people that thinks the 2020 election was stolen. Congratulations if that does apply to you, because you live in reality. I live in reality. We know that there was no fraud in the 2020 election to the degree that would have overturned the election results in any state. Heck, at this point, there's not even enough to overthrow it in any county, any city, any election that was held in 2020. Not enough fraud to overturn any of it. Instances here and there? Absolutely. Most of them Trump supporters, by the way. But no widespread. No irregularities with the voting machines. No foreign countries hacking in with their space lasers to change the votes. Nothing. And Mike Lindell, as I said, has now had three multi-day cyber symposiums where before each and every one of them, he swore up and down, I'm going to give it all to you. It's all coming out this weekend. Here it comes. Get ready for it. Nothing. Not a thing. So, Mike, I got to ask you, bud, where is the evidence? You say you've had it. You've literally now been saying it for over a year that you're going to do it. And once you do it, it's all over, everybody. You still don't even do it. So my question at this point is, how can anyone, even your most diehard election fraud believers, how can you watch this man lie to your face for over a year about presenting you this evidence? He gets up on stage, doesn't present you anything. How can you walk away from that and say, this guy's the real deal. He's telling the truth. He's telling it like it is. You're being hoodwinked. And honestly, I do still feel sorry for you. I know I probably shouldn't. But he is feeding you lies to sell you pillows and now coffee. Because that's what this is. Because on screen, the whole time on Lindell TV, or if you were one of the 1,500 people who watched it on YouTube or Rumble, because that's what they peaked at on their live stream, 1,500. They had about 400 people in the audience there. He gave you pillow codes. Coupon codes to go use at MyPillow.com. Or my coffee. Yeah, that's what you got. Because that's what this is. I firmly believe this is all just a massive con job. Now, that's not to say that Lindell doesn't believe his own claims. I also believe that he believes it. But I also think that he understands this is the best possible marketing he could ever hope for. he still labors under the guise that all publicity is good publicity, no matter what. Even bad publicity is good publicity. He wouldn't be putting coupon codes for his website on the screen throughout the whole thing if he didn't want to use this as a money-making operation, folks. You're being had. You're being strung along by a charlatan that knows he doesn't have any evidence to back up any of his claims. But he can continue to promise you the world, and they're going to continue to eat it up. But maybe after this one, just maybe, maybe there's enough sane people left out there who had been following him, that maybe they look at it and they say, you know what? I can't. I've been through 3 cyber symposiums now, and you've given me nothing. I have to move on with my life. I hope that happens, but I doubt it will. One interesting thing, though, by the way, did happen at this cyber symposium over the weekend, and it happened when Steve Bannon and Marjorie Taylor Greene were on stage, because why not? And it's when Steve Bannon suggested that Marjorie Taylor Greene should be the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. So here he is laying out his grand plan for Marjorie Taylor Greene's future. Take a look.
And once we win the House, do we have a better Speaker of the House than MTG? Look at that.
That's amazing.
Courage.
Are we going to need her as Speaker of the House to take it to the Democrats?
All right.
Let's remember something here, folks. This is an individual, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who before being elected to the House of Representatives in 2020 had never held elected office in her life. Okay? She is a first-time, first-term politician that hasn't even served a full term yet, that doesn't even have any committee assignments and hasn't for over a year. And Steve Bannon is out there saying she should be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Because nothing matters anymore at this point. Everything is a joke, so sure, why not, right? Now, I'm sure once you get into the House, you're going to find that most Republicans in there are going to say no to that. And it's not because they despise Marjorie Taylor Greene, but it's because they've paid their dues. And she hasn't. She is still a freshman representative that doesn't even serve on any committees. Heck, even Lauren Boebert's on committees. But not Green. You have literally no power. You can't even direct money back to your district because of your behavior that got you stripped of those committee assignments. And Steve Bannon's out here saying she should be the Speaker of the House. Now, I know right now that is a far-fetched idea, right, folks? 4 years from now, maybe not. I mean, Matt Gaetz has hinted at making Jim Jordan the Speaker of the House if Republicans take back the House of Representatives. They don't want McCarthy. They view him as weak. And if these, you know, kind of oddballs, your Matt Gaetzes and Jordans and Greens and Gohmerts and those folks, if they all band together and possibly even expand their numbers in this year's midterms, then yes, we could be looking at a situation where the worst of the worst becomes the Speaker of the House of Representatives. They've made it clear. I mean, Bannon made it clear. They want the worst people you could ever imagine to be up there. And I don't think he's joking. Even Mike Lindell was like, a fighter, oh, true, a patriot, all that. Oh, yeah, she's great. They love her. The rest of America, not so much. So, let's assume for a second Republicans get this, you know, horrible monkey's paw type wish, and they make her Speaker of the House. What happens in 2 years after that? I think we would see another blue wave, kind of like we did in 2018. Because I think putting lunacy on display, putting arrogance instead of intelligence on display for the Republican Party is a death sentence. And most normal Republicans understand that. You know, Kevin McCarthy knows that. Dan Crenshaw knows that. I mean, it's so weird that Crenshaw is being attacked as a rhino. You know, he's a very extreme Republican, but apparently still not extreme enough to not get attacked as a rhino. We're living in topsy-turvy world here, people. I don't understand what is going on with this Republican Party. All I know is that if you want to get ahead, you've got to act like the most ridiculous human being you ever have. And that's kind of why Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, showed up at Mike Lindell's weekend event. And unfortunately, we have even more Marjorie Taylor Greene news. This one actually quite serious. While Marjorie Taylor Greene probably stands no chance of becoming Speaker of the House of Representatives, and even though she no longer has any committee assignments, she actually has put forth legislation right now. And this is legislation that would ban gender-affirming care for LGBTQ youth here in the United States. Let me read this. This is from LGBTQ Nation. Green has introduced a bill that would make providing gender-affirming care for transgender minors a Class C felony. It would ban federal funds, including Medicaid funds, from being used for gender-affirming care for transgender people, ban medical schools from teaching about gender-affirming care, stop health care plans under the Affordable Care Act from funding gender-affirming care, and ban anyone found to have performed gender-affirming care from immigrating to the United States. Green's bill lists a number of procedures that aren't performed on minors, including castration, vasectomy, any plastic surgery that feminizes or masculinizes the facial features, and, quote, any placement of fat or artificial implants in the gluteal region. Butt implants. Because Marjorie Taylor Greene somehow thinks that we're out there getting our kids butt implants. And of course, to make it seem like she's not a bigot, she's not putting any of the criminality on the transgender folks. Oh, God, no, no. Just the doctors. And if you do any of the things she's listed in the bill, you face 10 to 15 years in a federal prison. Oh, I'm sorry. Minimum of 10 years, maximum of 25, not 15. So sorry. This is what they want. This is what they're trying to do. And again, this wasn't just some proposal she's put forward. It's an actual piece of legislation that she has introduced in the House. A House that, of course, is not going to take up this legislation right now. Next year, if Republicans win, who knows? We've already seen, by the way, some of the things that she has proposed in this national legislation happen at the state level. My governor, Ron DeSantis, this week came out and said no more Medicaid funds for gender-affirming care. This is what they want to do. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is laying the framework for how they will do it as soon as they get power. Listen, we got to take another quick break again. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David Pakman, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire. I've been sitting in for David Pakman today. And hey, folks, you know what we really dislike? We dislike socialists here in the United States. Or at least the Republicans do, right? Everybody that is their opponent gets smeared as a socialist. It's socialism, even though most of them couldn't even tell you what the word means. Everything they hate is a socialist or communist or fascist, even though, again, they just use those words interchangeably because they think that they all mean the same thing. Well, now, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who is up for re-election this year, his primary is actually today, and he's going to win because he's the only one, he is being smeared by one of his libertarian opponents as a socialist. And maybe smear is not the right word. He's being attacked by his libertarian opponent as a socialist. Libertarian opponent by the name of Dennis Misigoy. My apologies if I've mispronounced that. But either way, Mr. Misigoy said in a recent interview that Marco Rubio was a socialist. Now, Marco Rubio is many things, but a socialist, I never thought I would see the day where somebody would accuse him of being a socialist. But then I read this article that was, you know, an interview with Mr. Misegoy. He actually makes a good case. And I typically don't say that about anything that libertarians have to say, but he makes a dang good point. Let me read this. Rubio is pretty uniquely bad. No argument from me there. Right off the bat, you got my attention. Not just in the sense of being unpopular and easy to dislike, but policy-wise. This is a guy who got elected as part of the Tea Party wave back in 2010, and when you listen to him talk about dealing with issues of economic policy, it's all central economic planning. It's not free markets. I would characterize him, by the Republican standards, as a socialist. Is he a socialist by the means of seize the means of production and nationalize everything socialist? No. But is he a socialist by the Obamacare is socialist standard? I'd say yeah. Okay, you're losing me a bit there because Obamacare is, in fact, not socialist, so gonna have to ding you on that one, Mr. Misegoy. He continues, though. Republicans have long presented themselves as the champions of fiscal responsibility, smaller government, and whatnot. I really got turned off to them in the first part of the 2000s. George W. Bush was president for 8 years. For six of those 8 years, you had Republican majorities in Congress, and what'd they do with the spending and the growth of government? Well, we all know, right? Government grew, spending grew, deficits grew, all of that because Republicans are a bunch of socialists. Now, I think what Mr. Misegoy was trying to get at is that Republicans believe in corporate socialism, right? That's what you want. Because Republicans love to spend money. They love to give money to corporations. We love to prop them up. We love to bail them out. We love to give them subsidies and tax cuts just for the heck of it. So in that regard, yes, there's lots of socialism here in the United States, most of it at the hands of the Republicans, going directly into the pockets of the big corporations. So in that regard, if of course that's the point he's trying to make here, if that's what he's calling socialism on the behalf of Marco Rubio, I agree with you 100%. Now, there does come a point where I disagree with him, not about Marco Rubio, but about something else he said in this interview. Because then he gets back, you know, to his libertarian leanings. He makes a couple good points. He makes a couple confusing points that make no sense, as I said, with the Obamacare thing. But then he goes back to his libertarian ways, which never make any sense. Here's what he said. We want the market to be as efficient as it can be, because an efficient market delivers goods and services to people at the lowest cost possible, lowers the cost of living overall, that makes it easier for people to live, and it leaves more capital left over for people to create new things that improve people's lives further. Boy, I wish I lived in the fantasy world that you live in, Mr. Misegoy, because literally none of that ever happens, ever. And that, of course, is my big problem with these libertarians. They're living in a fantasy land. Well, if we just let corporations do whatever, of course they're going to take care of people. Of course they're going to lower prices. Hello? What on earth? Like, what drugs do you have to be on to make you have visions of this world where corporations inherently do the right thing? They don't. Even with government agencies that are supposed to force them to do the right thing, they still don't do the right thing. What I would encourage all of these libertarians in the United States to do is go get a job at a plaintiff's law firm and work there for at least a year. See, I've worked with a plaintiff's law firm, including actually other law firms all throughout the country as well, for almost two straight decades. I have seen some of the worst documents imaginable. From every industry imaginable, whether it's the tobacco industry, the fossil fuel, the chemical industry, food companies, they will literally never do the right thing unless they are forced to pay up for it. And when that happens, they typically only do the right thing while they think people are still paying attention, then they go right back to doing horrible things. So again, libertarians, I beg you, read some corporate documents. Then get back to me on whether or not you think corporations will inherently do the right thing for the American public. And you know what? While we're talking about some of the stupidest things imaginable that a human being can say, let's talk about Herschel Walker, right? Herschel Walker, this week, came out in his opposition to the Inflation Reduction Act. And I am so sorry. It's so hard to keep a straight face and do this sometimes. And he said that, we don't need additional spending on environmental issues because aren't there enough trees already? Let me read his exact statement. They continue to try to fool you that they're helping out, but they're not, because a lot of money, it's going to trees. Don't we have enough trees around here? Climate change solved, folks. We're done. Pack it up, environmentalists. We've had a great run. But Herschel Walker just exposed the whole thing. There's already trees out there. They've seen the trees, folks. What are we going to do? They know the trees exist. Look. Okay? I don't want to be just exceptionally hard on Herschel Walker. Okay? I know he has had a difficult life. He has openly talked about, mental problems that he has had. And I do not want to pile onto that, and I do not want to, act like an ableist here at all. What I will say, however, with regard to policy, is that this statement is unfortunately not an aberration. These are the kinds of things that conservatives say to get you to think that any action to protect the environment, to make the climate not hit that point of no return, is stupid. Right? In their eyes, we're the stupid ones because we want to protect the planet. We're the stupid ones because we don't want to kill 1,400 people a year in the United States alone with air pollution. We're crazy for thinking that. That, my God, what if we just made things better for people? That makes us the weirdos. No. Somebody who's going out there saying, we got enough trees out here, what are we doing? That's the weirdo. The weirdos are the ones who bring snowballs onto the floor of the Senate in wintertime and say, well, climate change is done. We're witnessing right now in this country, today, look out your dang windows. You see climate change. If you're in Texas, you're seeing it firsthand. If you're in Colorado and California, you're seeing it firsthand. Down here in Florida, we're seeing it firsthand. New Orleans, seeing it firsthand. And countless other places all across the country. A couple more trees here and there isn't going to solve it. And no, by the way, for the record, we do not have enough trees out there either. But Herschel Walker is carrying on in that long Republican tradition of denying that climate change exists and then trying to reduce it to its most ridiculous form. Listen, that's all the time we have for today. We got a wonderful members-only bonus show coming up for you in just a little bit. But if you want more from me, Farron Cousins, you can find me youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm also at youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And I'm Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at FarronBalanced. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the David Pakman Show.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCD Pittsburgh and its members.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother. Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT, the in sound from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty, and full of flavor since 1949.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
War, even so-called good wars against fascism like World War II, wars don't solve any fundamental problems, and they always poison everybody on both sides. They poison the minds and souls of everybody on both sides.
We spend the hour remembering Howard Zinn, the legendary historian, author, professor, playwright, and activist born 100 years ago today. After witnessing the horrors of war as an Air Force bombardier in World War II, Zinn became a lifelong peace activist, joining the civil rights movement as a professor at Spelman College in Georgia, protesting the Vietnam War, even hiding the Pentagon Papers for whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. Howard Zinn wrote the classic work, A People's History of the United States, that changed the way we look at history in America. He was a regular guest on Democracy Now! We'll feature his interviews and speeches, including of one of his final addresses in 2009.
Remember this, the power of the people on top depends on the obedience of the people below. When people stop obeying, they have no power. When workers go on strike, huge corporations lose their power. When consumers boycott, huge business establishments have to give in.
Today, our Howard Centennial. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Voters went to the polls Tuesday for primaries in Florida, New York, and Oklahoma. In New York, redrawn congressional districts led to the losses of two Democratic incumbents. In New York's redrawn 12th congressional district, Congressmember Gerald Nadler defeated fellow incumbent Carolyn Maloney, the chair of the House Oversight Committee. In the redrawn 10th congressional district, former federal prosecutor Dan Goldman defeated several more progressive opponents, including incumbent Mondaire Jones and Eileen New, a member of the New York Assembly. Goldman, who is an heir to the Levi Strauss fortune, spent $4 million of his own money on the race. He also picked up a controversial endorsement from the New York Times, whose publisher, Sulzberger, is a close family friend. In another closely watched New York race, Democrat Pat Ryan won a special election in a swing district in the Hudson Valley, defeating Republican Mark Molinaro for an open seat. Ryan campaigned heavily on the need to protect reproductive rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. He spoke Tuesday night.
When the Supreme Court ripped away reproductive freedoms, access to abortion rights, we said, this is not what America stands for. As more and more kids are getting gunned down by the same weapons I carried in combat, we said, this is not what America stands for.
In Florida, the state's former Republican governor, Charlie Crist, won Florida's Democratic primary for governor Tuesday. Congressmember Crist will face Republican Governor Ron DeSantis in November. Crist spoke Tuesday night.
The stakes could not be any higher for this election. Our fundamental freedoms are literally on the ballot, my friends. A woman's right to choose on the ballot. Democracy on the ballot. Your rights as minorities are on this ballot. That's what's at stake in this election. Make no mistake about it, because this guy wants to be president of the United States of America, and everybody knows it. However, when we defeat him on November 8th, that show is over.
In another Florida race of note, 25-year-old Maxwell Alejandro Frost won the Democratic primary in Florida's 10th congressional district. He's set to become the first Afro-Cuban American and first member of the Generation Z to serve in Congress. Frost is the former